Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters' Roundtable with a look at the top stories of the week. As always, there is a lot to talk about. Hurricane Ida, back to school in the DMV, recapping the March on Washington, and gun violence in our communities. My guests are Mary C. Curtis, columnist at Roll Call, and April Ryan, White House correspondent and Washington Bureau Chief for the GRIO. Join this conversation. Lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You're welcome to tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. April, Mary, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me, Harold.
Before we get to some of those topics that I just mentioned, we need to talk about the latest news out of Afghanistan.
I'm here to announce the completion of our withdrawal from Afghanistan and the end of the military mission to evacuate American citizens, third country nationals, and vulnerable Afghans.
That's General Kenneth McKenzie, CENTCOM commander, making that announcement about 2 hours ago. The last C-17 plane flying out of Afghanistan. The report is that there are still some Americans left behind, but all military personnel out. April, I'll start with you. Your reaction to this announcement today?
Well, first of all, let's be clear. This is still a very active situation. It's a very curious situation, if you will, because, the Secretary of State is still speaking right now. As we are talking, he's talking about the diplomatic mission, how it has shifted after 20 years from a military mission to a diplomatic mission. But you have to remember, at this moment, we still have some Americans there. And what Secretary of State Blinken has said is that any American who wants to come home, no matter when, they will bring them home. The question is, will the Taliban stand by their promise to let Americans come home? There is still an issue about trust with the Taliban. I talked to Greg Meeks, Congressman Greg Meeks, the head of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, just before we heard from Blinken, and he talked about that issue of trust. They don't trust, but they have to watch. They're watching. It's a wait and see at this moment. You know, about 6,000, according to the Biden administration, have left. 6,000 Americans have left Afghanistan, and there are about 200, between 100 to 200 Americans still there. And it's now a diplomatic mission, but the effort is for anyone, any American who wants to come home, they can come home no matter what time. That's what they're saying. The question is, will the Taliban hold true to their promise? And that's, we're still in this wait-and-see moment. It's still very tense. It's still a wait-and-see moment, even as, the Taliban has taken over full control of the airport there. And it's a wait-and-see moment as each day goes on.
Mary, your thoughts about this announcement today?
Well, I would very much agree with April that while so many Americans who, let's face it, hadn't really thought a lot about Afghanistan until recently would like to put it in the rearview mirror, because with a volunteer army, not so many American families actually have folks who are serving. But it is far from a finished situation. For all of the reasons that April said, that there are still Americans there, there are Afghani Americans who have family over there, it hasn't finished, and we have to see what the Taliban is going to do. But also, the United States has to keep its eyes and ears on that part of the country and that part of the world, because we've seen with the attacks by ISIS-K, yes, they have to figure out and see if there are terrorist organizations that will have an effect on what's going on in this country and on international events. Will they still be operating there? What is going to happen? There will have to be some cooperation with the Taliban. The Taliban wants to be an internationally respected governing body, so they're going to have to do some cooperation with the United States as well as other countries. And so there will be a lot of reflection on how they are going to keep a presence of some sort on the ground in that part of the country. Who will their allies be? I think overall, yes, it's a tragedy, and it will actually have Americans and our leaders thinking about our foreign commitments. Here we have a 20-year forever war, as it's been called, and at this point, the mission has been very muddled. When you have a situation where people can't clearly say, what are we doing there? Is it nation building? Are we trying to build up women? What is going on? Are we supporting a counterinsurgency? What is actually the mission? Well, then you have to wonder why we were there. And looking forward into the future for the United States and its allies, they will be very skeptical about getting into these foreign entanglements when they might go on and on and on. And I think, as I said in the beginning of what I was talking, that many Americans at this point really, I think, want to have this behind them.
And I don't think it's going to be that easy, because there is yet another issue that is slowly beginning to creep up here at home. There was an announcement that was made today about so many Afghanis who are coming to the United States. Indeed, they've come through Dulles. Well, what are you going to do with them? Where are they going to stay? Well, they're going to be at Quantico Marine Base in Virginia right now. But then we still don't know for how long. And then where do they go from there?
So Harold, can I piggyback off of that?
Sure.
And off of what Mary is saying? There are a lot of questions that are still being answered. And you know, and this has been the foremost thought, we will never leave Americans.
Mm-hmm.
We will never leave our Americans anywhere. But what do you do with those who support the Americans in the effort? And that's the issue. And you're in a moment of COVID as well. So, and that is a big issue, vaccination / testing, et cetera. Who has COVID? Who doesn't? This is a very tense moment, and it's so interesting. Again, I'm going back to my conversation with Congressman Meeks, and he, again, is the head of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and they're getting ready to have a big hearing. The House is going to have a hearing on this. They're going to do oversight on this. From the beginning, 20 years ago to now,
yeah.
Lessons learned, what could have been done, what was done right, what was done wrong, et cetera. All of this comes in the purview, all of this. So it's just, it's still unfolding.
It is
still very much unfolding, and we cannot put absolutes on it as of yet. This is still so much of an unfolding situation, but we do know that America is not leaving Americans behind, nor at this moment will they leave those who supported America in their efforts in Afghanistan first, to get those who attacked us in 9/11, and then it ultimately turned into a fight against the Taliban. Not an official war like we know government to government, but it became a fight against the Taliban.
202.
And it's so interesting when you talk about the refugees. You have to put it in a political context, because everything now, of course, as April knows, is so political.
Yeah.
When President Trump was in office, they kind of halted that special immigrant visa program to get folks in, because people don't realize, people just don't come into this country, get on the plane, and they're in America. They go through vetting that can take years and years, 3, 4, 5. Some of these folks have been trying to have their applications processed for 10 years now, and they are very heavily vetted, and that program was pretty much stopped. So a lot of this is going to be trying to get people through this pipeline, but you have already seen so much politics come into it. And it's interesting because many Republicans are trying to criticize President Biden for how this was handled, and it has to be investigated, as April said, but the Democrats want to investigate the whole process, not just say, you know, this was President Biden's fault on how it was done and how else would you do it. But also Republicans are then saying, yes, we want to support the people who supported us, but we don't want a whole bunch of Afghans coming into the country. So you've seen a lot of folks on the right really use that as a as an instrument to try to attack and say, we don't want to help these folks because we don't know who they are. Where in actuality, as I said, to get into this country, you have to be vetted.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. If you have a comment, if you have a question about any of the stories that we're talking about tonight, we invite you to call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. April, I know we don't have you for very long, but I did want to get this in before we let you go, because I'm really curious to get your opinion about the march on Washington this past week. My opinion is that this was not the march on Washington of 2020.
Is that your opinion? Well, let me tell you, that is fact. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and this is why I say that. Just from making some observations. Now, I will admit, I thought that the march itself, led by Martin Luther King III and Al Sharpton and other leaders, was quite muscular. I will say that.
Okay, so Harold, so I was there.
Yeah,
and
I was there. Yeah, I was there too. So, but please go ahead. Yeah,
and I was on the ground at Bose. There was the Good Trouble rally, and
right.
Then there was that march on for Washington and voting rights.
Right.
So the first one, let's talk about the one with Tamika Mallory and
right.
Latasha Brown, the Good Trouble rally. That rally was, it was sparse.
Yeah.
We just have to admit it was sparse. And then when you go to the other one with Reverend Al and MLK 3, it was, you know, Reverend Al said he sent 20,000 people home. Who were out there marching because of the heat. It was hot.
Yes.
It was extremely hot that day. But we're also dealing with COVID. But you had people out there marching, but it was not. The volume was not there. And Jamal Bryant said, you know, Pastor Jamal Bryant of New Birth, I caught up with him, and he said, you know, we're dealing with COVID. And we're dealing with, you know, so many other things, kids going back to school. But it's a lot going on right now. And I threw out an unofficial poll on Twitter because the crowds were so sparse, and you'll see it. I said, is this, you know, is voting rights still important, yes or no? 97, 96% said yes, and it was like 4% said no. So the issue is there, but we're not seeing the volume there. But here's the thing, and I talked to people over the summer, to include Mark Moriel, the national head of the Urban League, and so many other people who used to be in White Houses, et cetera. Part of the problem is people don't fully understand what H.R. 1, H.R. 4, S.1, all of that is, and filibuster. And someone said to me, why don't they just lump it all under one bill to help people understand? And that's true. Some of the messaging has been lost. People know that, you know, I'm told I can't go in some states, I can't go to the poll and have somebody bring me food if my diabetes, if my sugar gets out of whack, I can't get food. They know that, but they don't know all the minutiae of pre-clearance and redistricting when it comes to voting rights and how it impacts us. And I think the messaging was off with that. I think the messaging has been off with saying, come out. I don't believe it was hyped enough. 58 years after the March on Washington, and it was scarce. It was uncomfortable standing at the Lincoln Memorial, to be honest with you.
But here's the thing. I think it's simpler. This year, yeah, COVID is still an issue, but we have vaccines now. COVID was an issue.
But that's not an absolute.
Hold on.
Not absolute.
Last year we had COVID and we had no vaccines. The issue last year was simple. George Floyd was murdered. People
that's right.
were ticked.
And people understood
and
that.
They understood that.
They saw it.
You didn't have HR 1. You didn't have to worry about what was, like you said, you didn't have to explain pre-clearance. You didn't have to explain food in the vote. No, they killed a black man. And everybody, it was COVID be damned last
right.
year. Because
you know, all you have to say, Eric Garner, you know, he called out 11 times on videotape, chokehold by police. He's dead.
Yeah.
It was wrong. Exactly. We know that.
Yeah. And so, like I said, and I think the other observation that I made at McPherson Square was, and this is just an observation, it's not a judgment, it's not right or wrong, but one of the things I did notice, there were a lot of white people out there Saturday.
But you know what? But you know what? That's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's just an observation. I noticed.
Your observation is great. But yeah. Look, your observation is on the money. It's a good thing because change comes when it's not just one face.
Yeah.
When it's a whole community. History has shown us that. When Dr. King wanted voting rights, he dared for voting rights. After he got the Civil Rights Act, he said, LBJ, he told LBJ, look, we want this. He said, look, I don't have the political power. Go out and make me do it. He did. When he went to Selma and white America saw it, when they were calling us the N-words, when they were knocking us down with billy clubs on our heads and having the bite of the dog through our skin and the sting of the hose, white America saw it and joined in.
Yeah.
And that allyship got us that movement to move Congress and the president to give us voting rights.
Yeah,
but
go, hold on, April. I've got a minute before my break. I've got to let you go, and I want Mary to get in before the break because I want to hear more from Mary. Then we're going to bring Jamila Bey in as well. Mary, real quick, 30 seconds, and I'll let you continue on the other side.
Was on my podcast, Equal Time, as was Jim Clyburn, Majority Whip, making that point about how important voting rights is, and that everyone has to see that they have skin in the game. I think the folks who are making these laws are counting on it being muddled because some of these laws are so restrictive that Majority Whip Clyburn said if they don't get some voting reform passed, the Democrats will lose the House and the Senate.
Yeah. I need to take a break. April Ryan with the Griot, thank you so much. Be safe out there. We'll
thank
be talking
you.
Soon.
We went to the same high school, you know.
Oh, right.
All-girls Catholic High School in Baltimore. You have seen girls on. It's the bomb.
She's on Charles Street. And then, wait a minute, Harold and I went to college together. Okay, this is old Baltimore week, but we'll talk about all that later. Mary, let's chat.
All right.
Take care.
Pam okay. from D.C., stay on the line. Do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. We're going to talk to you next. We're at the Reporters Round Table. Stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Don't forget, download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone. You will hear the program live in its entirety. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and of course 98.3 FM. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable discussing some of the top stories of the week. My guests are Mary C. Curtis, columnist at Roll Call, joining us now, Jamila Bey, political editor with Viacom. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Pam real quick. Pam, what's on your mind?
I've been listening, and I just want to make a comment on whether you're going to ask a question or not.
Speak up for me, Pam, but go ahead.
Okay, and I heard it being said that for the Afghan people that need to come out, it's a tedious process for 10 years, you know, application, 10 years, and all that. And I'm not prejudiced by a long shot, but what I can't figure out is how could they let all these Latin Americans or Hispanics over here in the hundreds of thousands and have a problem with a few Afghans coming over here that has to go through a process of 10 years for an application process. I don't know if they look at Afghans being more darker, more towards the black race, and Hispanics more towards the Caucasian race. That's my first comment. Now, the second thing is the question. I've been listening on the news, and they said that 100 or 200 Americans are still over there, but they pulled all the troops out. So why is that so? Why couldn't they just wait or send another plane to get the 100 or 200 back here into the United States? So I know the system, and the system is all messed up all the way around, you know, because they do what they want to do, so who they want to do it for.
I think that's the technical answer right there. The system is all messed up. Let me have Jamila take a crack at that. Jamila, welcome to the program.
It's always a delight to be with you. And to Mary, good evening. Always a delight when we get to do this together. You know, in the first Gulf War in 1991, Colin Powell said, we cannot deal with Iraq in the way it needs to. These are hundreds of year old conflicts. There are a myriad ethnic groups. People who are in power understand this region better than we ever will. If because Hussein invaded Kuwait, we go into Iraq, we will never be able to leave. Colin Powell's still around. I don't know why they didn't ask him that question in Afghanistan. He would have given the same answer.
I think you make an excellent point. It's interesting. I was watching the 90s documentary at 3 o'clock this morning when I couldn't sleep, and they were talking about that very thing. But to Pam's question and comment, Jamila, I think she makes a provocative point where you have, you know, Afghans who are now coming over here, and these are people of color. And yet you have people who have been, who are, you know, south of the border, who are coming in from south of the border, and you have people of certain political persuasions who would say, well, it's okay to bring the Afghans over because of the politics there. But then you have the other politics regarding the Latin community. Let's not do your thoughts about what Pam's well thought out discussion is about.
Well, my grandmama knew she wasn't nothing but a sharecropper, and that was all she was ever going to be. She could not aspire out of her blackness. She could not identify as something other than black. Unlike the Italians. Unlike the Irish, they were, all of the Slavs were people of color up against the Anglo-Saxons until things shifted, political will changed such that they could aspire to claim whiteness. Look at our wonderful seasoning they food down in Miami, Cuban brothers and sisters. The light-skinned ones of them get to claim Republican white. The aspirational whiteness based on what you look like and how the majority of you tend to vote is something that we see all over this planet when they come to, when those different groups come to the U.S. Me being a blackety black granddaughter of a sharecropper and a granddaughter of another sharecropper, I can't pretend that I understand all the ways that one can aspire to and attain whiteness, but I'll tell you, our dark-skinned southern of the border, of the U.S. border, cousins going to have a whole lot harder time than people who can straighten the hair and stay out of the sun a little bit. And, you know, just look, air quotes, around ethnic. It's the way this country has been, and I don't particularly like it, but I'm not the class and I'm not the caste that gets to determine who you are based on the caste of your skin.
You're going to have a lot more people paying attention as you notice the latest census report that said the country is getting more non-white. Of course, you will have those who aspire to whiteness, but there are other folks. You know, someone actually even said, we don't want the Afghans coming in. Do you want hundreds of thousands of Ilhan Omars coming in? They actually even used her name, and she was interestingly said, what? So we will come in and achieve and get into Congress and compete with them. So you'll see a lot more people paying attention to and keeping score. Because as the census comes in and as our population, the demographics change, people are really going to be holding on to every bit of power they can in every way. So this will be much more contentious. All the issues of immigration, who gets to come, who gets to vote, and it's rough. It's going to be rough.
Pam, thank you so much for your thoughtful input to the conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. I wanted to pick back up, Mary and Jamila, on the conversation that we were talking about prior to the break, and that was a recapping of the March on Washington. And Jamila, I also wanted to hear your thought on the, in some cases, the sparse attendance, for example, the Good Trouble rally at the Lincoln Memorial. I was there as well. It was sparsely attended. The March on Washington, led by Martin Luther King III and Al Sharpton, was as I said earlier, it was muscular. But this was nothing compared to what we saw last year. And the point that I was making with April Ryan was, yes, COVID last year, COVID this year, but now we have people who were vaccinated, because this time last year there was no vaccine.
Right.
There were people dying by the thousands every single day. But I think that the main issue was that George Floyd had been murdered. It was as easy as 1 + 1 = 2. But when you're talking about voting rights and the like, and we're marching for the vote in, and there just seemed to be so many different factions. DC statehood on one side, which is something that I absolutely support. Okay, mm-hmm. Let me just...
Here we come to Columbia.
Yeah, okay, so... But then we've got, you know, we've got Texas, and then we've got HR1, and all of these other things. And I just think that it is as complicated as high school civics.
At least, and we know that at least the former president couldn't even understand high school civics, and you know, that's at the level of pubescent children. So here's the thing. Black Lives Matter is a statement of fact. It's a rallying cry. It is something that can be summed up by that pubescent child. It can be summed up by his little sister. What is Black Lives Matter? Why are you out here about George Floyd? Stop killing us. Stop police brutality if you want to get, you know, prison abolition if you really want to get, you know, into the more, you know, academic and esoteric ways of expressing it. But it comes down to stop killing us. When you had this march, which, you know, the 58th anniversary, hooray, and you have this attack on our voting rights, we know this. Stacey Abrams has a machine out of Georgia that I would argue could have gone up against the Daily Machine in Chicago at its peak. But that's not what people get out and stand in the street and, you know, bring their babies and, you know, recognize we might get tear gassed and we might have to come up against these fools, these terrorists that want to come out and literally fight us in the street. Life is always going to supersede vote. Even though I will concede, I come from people who literally got killed and locked up for registering black people to vote. This is an issue very near and dear to my heart. People don't bring their babies out in a pandemic to vote. Mm-hmm. People bring their babies out in a pandemic to say, stop killing us. Give my child a life. The fact that the confusion comes with not just you, but a whole lot of us, is not that it's a complex issue. It's that there's too many at once. Statehood, voting. 58th anniversary. By the way, there still is police brutality. And hey, Martin Luther King Jr., his granddaughter is going to talk. These are all issues that are important in their place. We'll turn people out. At the same time, you know, as folks are literally exhausted over this unending pandemic, and it don't have to be one, but it is an unending pandemic because freedom, you know, it was, I would argue, a task that was far too great for what was being asked of the people to show up.
Yeah, I think so.
It's interesting, though, because I get the frustration of people, because it may not be that visceral issue, but folks like William Barber and Martin Luther King III, as I said, who I spoke with on my Equal Time podcast, and Majority Whip Clyburn, want people to realize that you have to pay attention to these voting laws in all of these states. That's another complication. You've got 50 states. You've got 50 different systems. Because what might happen in Georgia, say, you might vote, and it might... you might vote for what you think is a certain candidate. You might stand in a line without the water. You might go to your place and find out it has been closed and they've changed it to another spot, which these laws would actually, with pre-clearance, you know, remedy. Mm-hmm. And then after that, after you've registered and done it, there's a law there that says they can come in and change it and say, we think that those Fulton County votes in Atlanta, with something going on here, so we're going to have the state legislature change it. And that's when people will get that visceral, oh, my goodness, what is going on? They're trying to take my vote away. But at that point, there will be a law, that law in Georgia, that law in Texas, that law in Arizona. And also, it's fascinating because when you had the reauthorization of the Voting Rights Act in the past, Democrats and Republicans, Bush, all of these folks signed it. There was bipartisan, overwhelming. Democrats and Republicans voted for it. This last time that the vote for the John Lewis Voting Advancement Act was brought up in the House, not any Republicans voted for it.
It was pure partisan.
Their colleague, John Lewis. Oh, they loved him. But, so I think that you're right. It is partly messaging, but the people who are on message, like the Reverend William Barber and others, want people to realize that if you don't pay attention to this issue of voting until it's too late, you might never have a free and fair election where your voice matters and your representation matters. Because people of color might be starting to be more of a majority, but in our system, there are ways that the minority can actually have the power over you.
Let me move on to the next items. Hurricane Ida swept through Louisiana. A lot of concern this weekend on the 16th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina that we may see a repeat of that. So far, so good. There has been the report of only one death. The levees have held, although in some cases they have been overrun. More than a million people without power. And there are some reports of looting in New Orleans and the like. But do you think, Mary, that New Orleans and more broadly southern Louisiana has done the due diligence to be prepared some 16 years after Hurricane Katrina?
Well, I mean, the levees look like they are holding, but you still have a response that exacerbates and actually highlights the wealth gap. Who are the folks that are able to get out, you know, who can go out? I've heard someone say, oh, I'm going to my other home, where other people are saying, I have to choose between paying the rent and evacuating. And then also there were a lot of other things they could have done that it was turned down, like having generators at gas stations and so people could get gas and these kinds of things that were deemed a little bit too expensive. And, you know, I think the folks that have the wealth realize it will not affect me as much. And as usual, you're going to have, I think also pharmacies, they were trying to get that they would have generators so that people could be able to get their medicines. because pharmacies would be open. So I think the aftermath, we will see how prepared they are, because it looks like folks are going to be without power, many of them, maybe for weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little early to say, oh, yes, we dodged a bullet, just because we don't have the devastation that we had during Katrina. Things can be better. That doesn't mean that they're optimal. And, yes, once again, COVID is a complication.
I was about to mention that, Jamila, I was about to mention mm-hmm. that same thing, because prior to the hurricane, Louisiana, one of those states that has a high infection rate and a mm-hmm. low vaccination rate, hospitals mm-hmm. already overrun with COVID cases. And now, as a result of the hurricane, and you're going to have people who get hurt post-hurricane, who need medical attention, who need, hospitalization. And there may not be room in the inn, the hospital inn, for them. And as Mary said, this is going to magnify the problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No room in the inn. You please trademark that, because, you know, you will be able to say, and I said it here first. I want to go back for a second. I want to go back to this former administration, because, you know, there are a lot of people, oh, Jamila, you just don't like Donald Trump. You know, the time to make sure that your hoses don't have holes in them and your ventilators work and that you're, and that, you know, one of the problems of 9/11 was that when fire companies came from New Jersey to New York, the hoses didn't fit the different oxygen tanks and whatnot, and it was just a cluster of a whole bunch of things that didn't go right. That has been happening with our climate, and that last damn president pulled us out of the Paris Accords, so that the world working in tandem to figure out, well, what do? We know big storms are going to happen. Let's put our heads together and put resources there. This last president took money. Folks who are in these southern states and voted for governors and mayors and whatnot who are in his pocket and his other places, I guess. This last president took money out of the FEMA budget and sent it to ICE to try and round up Spanish-speaking people, half of whom who lived here in the first place. That matters today, because that is cumulative work that we know that did not happen because it was like, oh, let's find three people in the country illegally who speak Spanish, and let's build a wall that we see is falling apart and flooding away in places. Instead of making sure that we have better development and infrastructure, we continue to work to fight what we know is going to come. Katrina used to be a once-in-a-lifetime event. Katrina's a once-in-an-every-10-year event. Now we're seeing that happen. So I don't know. There are some who say that we've passed the point of no return on climate. I don't know that we've done that, but I know we need to do something about it, and a whole bunch of sick people are going to show up and be told there's no room at the inn because all these unvaxxed people, you're either vaccinated or you're susceptible to Delta. Don't give me that breakthrough crap. Breakthrough infections and vaccinated people do not produce folks who need to go to the hospital and stay and be on ventilators. People are going to show up, and they're going to be told there's no room. And then we're going to see what happened at Memorial Hospital 16 years ago in Katrina, when they didn't have any resources and had all these patients and no idea what to do. It's coming. It's coming again. I remind you, Houston, it was cold, so it was snowing. People don't think of that as a hurricane or a flooding event. It snowed, and Houston had hospitals with no water and no power in the U.S. That's a third world country problem. But we had it in Houston, and we're going to see it again. If we don't see it in this storm, wait till the next one.
Speaking of dealing with sickness, we had the first day of school for a lot of jurisdictions here in the DMV. And the battle against COVID continues, particularly in school systems. First day of school in D.C., first day of school in Montgomery County, first day of school in Fairfax County, Virginia. And there are a couple of things that happened in Montgomery County. There was the announcement that random testing of some of the youngest students, sixth grade and below, random testing, parents still have to opt in, for COVID is going to happen. And in Fairfax County, if student athletes want to play sports in the winter and next spring, they must have proof of vaccination by November 8th. So these school systems, they aren't fooling around with COVID. They're trying to bring us back to some sense of normalcy. And it seems to me, Mary, to be a push me, pull you, I'm telling my age, situation here. Your thoughts on the difficulty and the struggle that schools are having with reopening, the battle of the mask battle, the anti-vaxxers, all of that?
Well, yeah, and I have a lot of educators in my family, including in the DMV, and family in Baltimore, actually. But I do think they're being frightened by the example of many of these southern states, and the schools usually open earlier there. And they had rules that said you can't have mask mandates and you can't have vaccine mandates. And you're seeing what's going on. You're seeing thousands of students quarantined. You're seeing hundreds of cases of COVID positive. You're seeing a backlash against masks and vaccines, but now you're seeing a backlash to the backlash with a lot of the parents, particularly who have kids who are immunocompromised, saying, wait a minute, you're asking me to go in there and put my kid's life in danger just because somebody's screaming about my body, my choice. And so at least I think, you know, when you see in Texas and Florida and these states where the governors, you even have in Florida where some of the school districts are fighting against the governor and getting some support in some of the courts, saying you can't have these rules where you're just forbidding school districts to do it. So I do think now you are seeing this. And it was interesting that Dr. Anthony Fauci is saying, you know, he's really pushing this vaccine and saying hopefully by October they are going to have some guidelines where children younger than 12 can get the vaccine, because that's the only way we're going to get our way out of this COVID mess with the Delta variant. You're going to just keep seeing these waves come back. So it is interesting that after the backlash, you see some parents standing up, and you do see in many of the states now, the governors, you know, I know in North Carolina, it's a Democratic governor, so he's supportive of vaccines and mask mandates. And the school districts that have opted out are seeing vast blow-ups of cases of COVID.
Jamila, your thoughts?
I have a child under 18 in the D.C. public school system, and I am overjoyed that we have an opt-out system. If you don't want your kid, if you don't want your kid randomly tested, and it's a saliva test, your kid can spit in a tube. It's not that hard. But if you don't want the kid to spit in a tube, then you opt out. But anybody who doesn't fill out the opt-out form, their kid might be asked, okay, child, spit in a tube. Let's see if you have COVID or not. I'm fortunate in that my child is vaccinated. We aren't immunocompromised. You know, we're a little heavier than we should be, but relatively healthy people. And in a place where your children, your future, your heart outside your body is walking around, we want our kids safe. There are some of us who still believe in that. If my kid wants to play flag football or wrestle, And he's literally got to be in another child's face as close as you get before it's a date and mom's got to intervene, I need to make sure that you know, COVID McCovidy is not breathing literally down my child's throat.
Yeah.
And you know, vaccine mandates, fine, don't get your kid vaccinated. He better not be breathing on my kid.
Yeah.
Because we'll find that out. And so it's a way for parents to do what we have always done, which is say, oh, yeah, if little Johnny's going to be in school, little Johnny's got to have his vaccination. And, you know, for all these people with these super strong immune systems, step on a rusty nail without a tetanus shot. Let me know how that works for you.
Real quick. Hold on,
like
Mary.
Polio vaccines, things
yeah.
like that. I mean.
That's very true. And like I said last year, you know, you have a lot of guys out here who had no problem with Viagra, with Pfizer, but now they don't want to take the shot. So that doesn't make sense to me. But anyway,
if you want to
hold on real quick, I've got to get to this real quick, and I've got to get some real short comments from both of you. And I'll start with you, Jamila, because you're definitely in the area. This gun violence is frightening, and the report today about the kidnapping ATM robberies, where these young men are literally walking up to people with guns, blindfolding them, tying their hands, threatening to kill them if they don't give up their ATM cards, and riding them around to different ATMs to take out the maximum amounts. We had also in Prince George's County last week, 8-year-old PJ Evans playing a video game in the safety of his apartment, and he was shot and killed. Your thoughts about this violence in the DMV?
We need help federally. This is beyond what our local jurisdictions are doing. I don't care. I understand civil rights, but if this was white folks killing us, the Department of Justice would already be involved. They are killing our babies. They just killed a 6-year-old girl in D.C. a few weeks ago. All loss of life is bad, but this is crazy. I was home. My baby called me talking about, we think they're shooting in the stadium, Mom. My child was there, but, you know, that's the stadium. Of course, he was fine. They're not going to let commerce be messed up because all that money in the Nationals' part. But poor black folks, we are dying. It is epidemic. It is a public health issue, and the DOJ needs to get involved.
Mary, 20 seconds, your thoughts.
So many communities are having law enforcement, but also violence interrupters, folks who have been in the system who now are trying to go in and get it at the root to combine jobs, mental health, employment, and other things to try to figure out a way to stop it, just to stop it. Violence interrupters, and a lot of cities are trying that because they've tried everything else.
Mary C. Curtis, Jamila Bay, also April Ryan on the program today. Thank you all for talking to us.
Always a pleasure.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, August 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.